أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين، حبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا وشفيع ذنوبنا، سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى أهل البيت طيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين، ولعن الله أعداءهم أجمعين إلى يوم الدين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله وقوله الحق. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. ويطعمون طعاما على حبه المسكينا ويتيما وأسيرا. صلاة محمد وآل محمد. If you have brought your kids with you, if I can ask you to please make sure they're sitting beside you. This is an English lecture, so there are no excuses. And those sitting by the door, if you can make some room for those who are about to come, please, that would be great. Thank you. صلوا على محمد وآل محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. First of all, I'd like to thank the Council of Islamic Guidance, Maulana Baqri as well, for allowing me, a haqir, a nachiz, a jahil, an individual who doesn't know anything, the sharaf to sit on this Minbar Rasul for the past 2 weeks and to address one of the best communities in North America. And it is a huge step, if you ask me, that the first 2 weeks of the month of Ramadan was only in English. It was a risk taken by the executive committee, I know. The choice of the language was right. The speaker, however, and next time, inshallah, I'll do a little bit better than that, inshallah. But also to my youth for the inspiration. All of you came out in busloads. Like I said before, I said it again, the view from up here, I see a lot of youth, interested youth who want to be here, who are taking notes, who want to learn. You are my inspiration. There's no doubt about it. And my only prayer to all of you is that when the imam comes, inshallah, you truly become the youth of Al-Mahdi, inshallah. And lastly, to my elders, those who support me, those who encourage me, those who would rather sit in an English speech as opposed to an Urdu speech, that to me is one of the biggest forms of compliments. I thank you for your support, for your tawfiq, for your inspiration, for your health, inshallah. One salat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. I do have two requests, as this is my last speech to the parents. Number one is, as Asanako mentioned, the Quran Khani circle that happens every single day at 7:30 is an integral part of the program. This is the month of the Quran, and we've been talking about the Quran for now 2 weeks now straight. And it's important that as the parents you instill that love for the Quran and bring them at 7:30. Allow them to sit in a circle, allow them to recite one or two ayats. We mentioned there's a hadith that says that one ayat of the Quran being read in this month is equal to one book of the Quran being read in other months. If you can, you have 2 weeks left, we are at the midpoint of the month of Ramadan. Make it a point now, before they start school, to instill that love of the Quran inside of them, inshallah. Secondly, the adab and adab of dua. In our deen, of course, there are several traditions that talk about the fact that dua is an essential part of this program. When I walked in today, during dua iftitah, unfortunately, there were several kids outside. And several kids in this shoe area playing foosball. And we'll get that table removed, inshallah. And it's, as funny as it is, it's important that as you're sitting there and you're listening to the dua, it's on the screen, and there's been immense effort to make sure all three languages are being shown every single night, then look beside you to ask yourself, I'm benefiting from this dua, is my child benefiting from that dua or not? So please, I ask you these two things, the dua and the Quran, inshallah. One more salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. And of course, my tabriq and my congratulations to the imam of our time, the rahbar of the ummah, the maraji, the ulama, the fuqaha, all of you, on the beautiful nights of the 15th of Ramadan, the birthday of Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba alayhi salatu wa salam. We are here to celebrate an imam who was Muslim in his life and is Muslim today as well, unfortunately. You know that when he was born, when his mother, Bi Fatima Zahra, salamu alayha, asked Amir al-Mu'mineen, what will you name this son? Amir al-Mu'mineen says that I will never do anything without the Holy Prophet's permission. When Amir al-Mu'mineen approached our Holy Prophet, and when the Holy Prophet asked Amir al-Mu'mineen, have you named your son yet? He said, Ya Rasulullah, in your presence, I can never do that. He then asked the Holy Prophet, what do you want to name my son? The Holy Prophet says, in the presence of Allah, I could never do that. At that moment, a wahi came down to our Holy Prophet. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sends his congratulations to you, Amir al-Mu'mineen, and says that you are to the Holy Prophet as Harun was to Musa. And you are to name your child the name of the first son of Harun, which was Shubair, or Shabbar in certain traditions. And Shabbar in Arabic means Hassan. So in fact, this is the family of the prophets where even their names are from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. In another tradition we have that heaven itself, this is a very ajib tradition now, heaven itself will complain to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that you have placed inside of me the faqir and the destitutes. We understand that the alam, the world beyond this alam, it's called alam al-aql, where even those existences will have the ability to talk and have aql and actually think and contemplate, etc. Heaven will be no different. When heaven complains to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that you have put the poor and the destitute inside of me, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will respond and say, do you not realize that I have decorated the pillars of your heaven with the names of Hassan and Hussein alayhim as-salam? And make it a point that, you know, one of the things I like about this center is that we do things usually in the shab of the day. And the lectures should kind of prepare you for the day that's coming tomorrow. Make it a point that when we celebrate these wiladats, that inside of your home, things are a little different tomorrow. To allow your children to realize that something special is happening today. Be it an agarbatti, if you have to light one. Be it a small gift for your child, be it a cake, whatever the case may be. Something to show your child that today is not like any other day. And when they ask you, Baba, Mama, why are we doing this? Then you tell them, today is the birth of our second Imam. This way you instill the idea that har khushi and har ghab, har gham, unse mansoob here, right? Whenever we're upset, whenever we're happy, we connect it back to the Ahlul Bayt. Otherwise, allowing this day to come and go without any sort of dhikr or remembrance in your house isn't creating the Islamic household that we need in this society. And to my youth, make it a point if you can, one hadith, one story, something from the life of Imam Hassan. Mafati, of course, has the amal, you can do that. But equally, this ma'rifat of the imam is important. You know that those who have gone for ziyarat, you know that part of the equation of the acceptance of your ziyarah is you have ma'rifat of who you're going to. And that process involves you picking up a book and reading it. Now, mashallah, we have many, many websites online that have well-translated books online. If you can, make it a point tomorrow. in between your naps, to go online and maybe read 5-10 minutes, maybe a hadith or tradition of Imam Hassan, and attempt to apply it in your life, inshallah. One salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Ultimately, though, when these types of dates come about, the more important thing is for us to be able to gain some lessons from the life of the Imam that we're here to celebrate. As I mentioned, Imam Hassan was an Imam who was very mazloom. And if it's two things that we can gain from his life, one was his tahammul, and second was his sense of justice. The Imam, like I mentioned, it's one thing where you are ridiculed and you have enemies outside your home. This was an Imam who was poisoned by his own wife. An Imam who even in today's day and age is known as a mitlaq. A mitlaq is somebody who is a habitual divorcer. If you read some of the ajib traditions we have in some of our Islamic books, unfortunately, talking about the fact that Imam Hassan had 70 wives, 90 wives, some say 300 wives. He would marry one and divorce the next day, marry one, divorce the next day. In one tradition I read, it says that it got to the point of this mazlumiyat, where they would report that Amir al-Mu'mineen would walk the streets of Medina begging the people to not give their daughters to my son Hassan. Can you imagine? He is a man who does not treat his women fairly. He's a man who divorces very easily. This mazlumiyat exists today about Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba. And the fact that he did sulh with Mu'awiyah, with all due respect to our Shia nation, there are many individuals who don't understand the philosophy of the sulh with Mu'awiyah, and thus there is this labeling that if somebody is, let's say, a little bit more, not as, let's say, inqilabi, not as political, oh, he's the Hassani approach, and the one who was out there, Ma'ad Bag America, he's the Husseini approach. It's a jahalat, I'm sorry to say. It's ignorance. We believe that this Ahlul Bayt is from one Nur. Had Imam Hassan existed in Karbala, he would have done what Imam Hussein did. And had Imam Hussein existed when Imam Hassan existed, he would have done sulh with Mu'awiyah. We cannot believe otherwise. Which brings me to my very first point. You know, Atullah Khamenei, may Allah protect him, inshallah. The rabbi had a very nice speech on leadership, on justice a few months ago. He talked about this idea that justice is the only virtue that's absolute. No other virtue out there can be seen as an absolute virtue. He says that, and he gives an example. He says peace or sulh, for example, is a virtue, no doubt. It is, though, a relative virtue. There are times where peace is allowed, there are times where peace is not required. And the example he gives is the sulh of Imam Hassan alayhi salam. He says that had Imam Hassan gone to war with Mu'awiyah, and had Imam Hussein did sulh with Yazid, Islam would have been nabood and completely destroyed as we know it. So there are moments where, the rahba says, where there are instances where peace and war are relative. But justice, he says, is not like that. There's never a moment where you could say that injustice was preferred to justice. Never. Throughout history, whenever there is a moment to instill justice, you instill it. And that's what Imam Hassan did. Imam Hassan did justice to Islam. The same philosophy that Amir al-Mu'mineen took about during the Khilafat reign is the same philosophy during the Sulh of Mu'awiyah. Understanding the sacrifice of the Ahlul Bayt towards Islam. He was the son of Sirat al-Mustaqim, was he not? The same father who in majority of our mufassireen, when it comes to this ayat of Ahdina Sirat al-Mustaqim, they bring about a very beautiful tradition by Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wa salam. And I'll mention that hadith in a moment, just very 2 minutes, very briefly here. For example, Allama Tabatabai Rahmatullah alayhi and Tafsir al-Mizan describes what it means to be on Sirat al-Mustaqim. He says that anything that you do, where you are following Allah's commands, that act you're doing on Sirat al-Mustaqim. If you sleep the way Allah wants you to sleep, you're sleeping on Sirat al-Mustaqim. If you're walking and talking and eating and drinking the way Allah wants you to do those things, you're doing those things on Sirat al-Mustaqim. Now when we read 10 times a day that, oh Allah, guide me towards the right path, what are we asking Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Are we not on the right path? God forbid, are we off the right path? Are we asking Allah, guide me towards the right path? No, we understand that the sirat itself has many levels to it. The sirat that Imam Hussein treaded on the day of Ashura and the sirat that you and I tread on are completely zameen asman different. So what we're asking Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala when we say ahdina sirat al-mustaqim is, oh Allah, increase the level of my awareness on this sirat al-mustaqim. And Allama writes that the best way to do that is, I mentioned a few days ago that we are individuals who are copycat individuals, right? You want us to be a certain way, we search for a blueprint somewhere online to copy that. So Allama says that because we are like that, he says, now you have to search for somebody, some existence, somewhere, that every aspect and every dimension of their existence is on Sirat al-Mustaqim. Where when they're sleeping in the bed of Rasulullah, they're sleeping on Sirat al-Mustaqim. When they're ripping the door of Khaybar with two hands or one hand, they're ripping the door of Khaybar on Sirat al-Mustaqim. When they're giving their ring as zakat, they're giving that ring on Sirat al-Mustaqim. Now when you bring that tradition of Imam Sadiq that says, Al-Sirat al-Mustaqim, Amir al-Mu'mineen, Allama writes, Imam Sadiq does not say that Amir al-Mu'mineen is on Sirat al-Mustaqim. He says Amir al-Mu'mineen is Sirat al-Mustaqim. This is who we are here to celebrate, the son of Sirat al-Mustaqim. A man who took this legacy of Amir al-Mu'mineen and continued it further. But what I really want to speak about here is Imam Hassan's generosity. Stay with me for a moment. I know it's a weeknight and I'll keep it short inshallah. As many of you know, the Dastakhan of Imam Hassan is very famous. There are people who, mashallah, keep that dastakhan alive in this city too, mashallah. Where did this dastakhan idea come from? And I want us to understand, what can we extract from the life of Imam Hassan? He was a man who, some traditions say, two or three times gave away half of his wealth to the poor. Now you may think, okay, that's not a big deal. If you ask me to give away half my wardrobe, I'll give half of it away. What we don't realize is that the Ahlul Bayt would only buy those things that were completely necessary. Meaning if you were asking Imam Hassan to give away half of his belongings, that half is, those are his essentials. It's not like you and I where, you know, if we're asked to donate clothes, we search for the most ripped and most stained and the most tight clothing, we give that away and then we feel like we've done something good. No, Imam Hassan actually had a small collection of his risk, and of that he gave half away. Why half? Why not full, you'll ask? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that even if you have $2 in your pocket and somebody asks you for help, you give $1 to them, you keep $1 for your family and for yourself. This idea of giving everything away and then begging on the street, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that doesn't cut it. You have to feed your family and feed yourself at the same time, also support the individuals who are in need. But where did this come from? We know that Imam Hassan is a product or an individual who was raised in the house of Wilaya. The first son of a couple of Ismat, we know that. But more importantly, this very important story in Surah Insan, Surah Dahra, that we often hear about. And I'll relate that back to what we need to do today in our life, mashallah. The surah talks a little bit about this idea of Imam Hassan falling ill. Our Rasulullah, many of you know the story, our Rasulullah approaches Amir al-Mu'mineen, says do 3 days of fast in Nazar in terms of Imam Hassan, inshallah after that he'll find his health. And Mawla Ali does just that. The entire house fasts. And every day for iftar across 3 days, at the moment of iftar, there's a knock on the door. A miskin, a yatim, a seer comes to the door. A poor individual, an orphan and a captive. And at the moment of iftar, and I know a lot of you can relate to this, at the moment of iftar now, if someone knocks on your door, you and I will ignore it. Say, look, we're doing iftar now. It's been 18 hours. Don't bother me. Whoever you are, you can go away eventually. But Amir al-Mu'minin doesn't do that. He not only answers the door, but he gives his entire iftar to this individual. Not only Amir al-Mu'minin gives his iftar, but Janabi Fatima Zahra salamu alayha also gives her iftar away. And they go hungry for the first day. This happens 3 days in a row. You've heard the story, I don't want to go into details. Who's watching this? A very young Imam Hassan's watching this. That's why we see in his life that whenever he would pass by a group of faqirs, of beggars, they would ask him, "O son of Abu Turab, come and sit with us and eat with us." And he would sit down and he would actually eat with them. To the point where his companion said, "Look, with all due respect, you're the imam of your time. You're dealing with these individuals." Not only would he sit with them, he'd also invite them to his house. Open up a dastakhan, open up a sufre, and have this idea of unlimited food with them. Which brings me to the point that in this day and age, when we are struggling to keep our children on the path of Islam, we have to resort back to the way the Ahlul Bayt raised their children. And we have to know that the effect of Imam Hassan's generosity is the fact that he was, like I said, raised in the house of generosity. So many of you may believe that, look, no matter what I do in my house, it's not going to affect anybody. You may believe that bringing the youth, let's say, to a Mahdi once a week, or to Sunday school, let's say, for 4 hours a day is enough. These types of programs, these types of organizations are meant to reinforce what you do at home, not replace what you do at home. A lot of our parents nowadays, I don't know what it is. Are the kids becoming a little bit more bold? Are the children becoming a little bit more rude? Are they more feisty? Are they more lippy? What is the case? I don't know. But the way I sometimes see the way the parents and children in today's age interact, if I had the gall to do any of that with my father, and you knew my father, it wouldn't work. My father had a certain way of looking at me that Abbas can attest to. A simple stare and it would be enough for me. It worked on many of you as well, I believe. But in today's day and age, it's not like that. If I ask a parent, "Why aren't you asking your child to come inside and sit with you?" They say, "I asked him. He didn't listen. He's 8 years old." An 8 year old having that much control over you is not possible. So what we want to do tonight is we want to be able to understand is, where is my house going? Where is my family going? And my khitab mafsusan is to the fathers and husbands in the audience. We have countless traditions that say that all of us men are responsible to take our homes to Jannah. Our wives, our children included. Every single member of our family look to us to guide them and lead them. And if you turn that over, let's say, to anybody in your house but you, there's going to be problems. If you yourself are not practicing in your house, how can you expect your son or your daughter to practice? Especially when you know that in this society, once they leave your house, you are leaving them in the hands and the clutches of this society. They're gone at 9 a.m., they come back at 3 p.m., God knows where they've been, what they've been doing, who they've been doing it with, who knows? You just pray that, you know, you raise a proper child. To combat the society on the outside, you now have to build a proper society inside your house. You have no control of the society outside your house. No control. You do have control over your four walls, though. Now, if you expect a child to be on the path of taqwa and piety and Islam, when he's getting zero Islam on the outside and zero Islam on the inside, you bring him dragging and screaming on Thursday nights. You make him sit in a half an hour durs, let's say, and hope and pray that that will be enough for you. You're fooling yourself. Because then when that kid is 20, 25, 26, he's completely detached from the community, you will search for people to blame. You'll blame the executives, you'll blame the ulama, you'll blame the youth group, you'll blame everybody, but you won't look yourself in the mirror and say, "What did I do? Or what didn't I do to ensure that my child remains in the path of taqwa?" If you look at those children who are successful in our communities, in our societies, they come from a very strong family background. Parents who put their iron fists down sometimes. Parents who made it a point that this community, or any community really in this city, is a vital part of your life. And I'm here to tell those parents in the audience that if you want to save your child in this society, and take it from someone who's part of this society, I was born and raised in this city, from this center, I can tell you that if you detach your child, or you allow your child to be detached from any community, you are asking for something that you won't want to happen in about 5-10 years. And to those who are right now listening to me online as well, you know, this technology is great and all, and I love the fact that it's getting out there, but the problem with this live feed in every center is that people who are 10 minutes from the center now are sitting there right now in their pajamas listening to me. This live feed is not meant for those people. The live feed is meant for those people who are in the rural farm areas, who have no ulama, no mosque, no center, no nothing. Not a man who can go in a car, grab his kids, and come here in half an hour. You're asked to bring your children here. Bring your child. Let them mingle and mix with the people of this community. Let them see what an Islamic community looks like. Now, I know what they'll say, and many have said this to me before, that they don't like it here, they don't like it there, they think there's too much politics, too much fitna, facade, angry arguments, culture, blah, blah, blah. And that is nothing but a cop-out, an excuse, a bahana, I'm sorry to say. You come here, at the least you get Jamaat prayers, at the least. You get a dua at the least. You get someone saying salam to you at the least. Don't get yourself involved in the negative. Come and gain what you want and leave. This bahana that I don't come because I'm not welcome here. I don't come because it's not my language. I don't come because of this and that, this and that. One by one, these excuses are being met by the executives of this center and other centers. The biggest complaint from when I was a child was language. The biggest complaint was language. Although people from my generation know that our parents made us sit there, listen to a speech. If we took 5% of that, we'll take 6% tomorrow, 8% the next day, 10% the next day. To the point where we might even understand a little bit of what's happening in the speech. Language was never a barrier, it never is a barrier. But even if we accept the fact that language is a barrier, what about now? Across the GTA at least, half the centers have English. I still don't see the youth that I should be seeing. Now you may stop there and say, oh, they go to different centers. Fine, that's great. If you believe they're going to different centers, then that's great. But I'm talking about those individuals and some of the parents in this audience I'm looking around. Your children are involved in this thought. That I don't like this place. I don't feel welcome here. Like someone says to you when you walk in, what are you doing here? Get out of here, you're not welcome here. No one has ever said that to anybody in this center. The point I'm trying to make is that we are right now facing a society before the arrival of the Imam that's going to get progressively worse. The Thursday before the arrival of the month of Ramadan, I mentioned to you some of very dangerous traditions about what the Ummah will look like before the arrival of the Imam. How the masjids will be beautiful on the outside, empty from tawfiq and hidayat on the inside. Muslims will be Muslims by name only. No hijab, no beard, even their names will change. And Islam will be left to fend by itself. And this is the Holy Prophet describing the Ummah before the Imam comes. Talking about how the fact that this vast world, this planet that can host 10 billion people, it will become a prison for a believer. Not one inch of this land will be safe enough for you and I to do worship on. This is where it's headed. This is where we see it now. And you all have chosen to migrate from your country to here. Once that migration happens, you are completely responsible for that child. Because in the grave, on the day of judgment, if Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala asks your child, that why were you not closer to the deen than you should have been, God forbid he blames you, God forbid he blames the community, whatever the case may be, we don't want to allow our kids, our next generation, to have constant complaints about us. We have lost generations in front of my eyes, my brothers and my sisters. All of you have witnessed that. And there are movements, and there are programs, and there is a different chain of thoughts. You know, I mentioned this to some of my older uncles a few days back. The thought of English Messiah 10 years ago used to be laughed at. English Messiah, pardon me? They used to say, yes. And then English Ashras, now English Ramadan as well. And if you look at what I look at it from, in the past 2 weeks, I see an immense amount of momentum towards this movement that this society now has to change. And all of you are changing with it. You're not taking your kids with you, though. And some of you are, mind you. Majority of you, though, from my generation, 5 years younger than me, mid-20s, late-20s, I just don't see them that I should be seeing them every single day. And again, I'm not talking about this center. No one's asking me to say this speech, nothing. I'm talking about the fact that we are blessed in the GTA to have, what, 9, 10 idaras out there? Pick one. Pick one that you can gain hidayat from properly. And make it at least once a week that you remember Allah, you sit there in the four walls of the community, you mix and mingle with your brothers and sisters, you become part of the community. Because God forbid, I've heard stories of individuals who have passed away in their apartment. They've sat there for 3 days, their dead body. Nobody knows they're alive or dead because they had no rapta, no connection with the community at all. God forbid that happens. God forbid it happens where your mayyat doesn't have enough people to carry your coffin because you're not involved in the community. Where people getting ghusl to this body has to call people, can you please come to the mayyat? He was a new brother or he was around. All these different things are there. God forbid that happens. So one lesson from the life of Imam Hassan is that his generosity came from the atmosphere in his house. We have to learn how to create the Islamic atmosphere in our home. We cannot be double-faced. We cannot confuse our children. You know, these children of yours at a certain age, they look up to you as their fathers. And they look up to you with these eyes of pride. You know, 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds, even 10-year-olds up until a certain point will see you as their father, as their superhero. You can do no wrong. You're the strongest, you're the smartest, you're the best. My dad this, my dad that. He brags about you in his playground, in school. And then that moment where you say one thing, you do another. You lie in front of him, you don't pray salat in front of him. You create this idea of hypocrisy in front of him. That respect he has for you goes down one notch. And then we get to a point where sometimes we have in our communities, here in our communities, we have youth who resent their parents. Can you imagine? Who'd rather spend the entirety outside their home than inside their home. Because inside their home there's arguing, there's screaming, there's closed doors, there's no love, there's no compassion. No one ever asks me, how am I doing? The only time that my father ever asks me about anything is, where's my cell phone, where's my wallet, where's my keys? That's it. And I understand that. My father explained this to me very carefully one day. He's like, we were never raised that way in Pakistan or India. You're absolutely right. I go, Dad, you're correct. But you're not in Pakistan, India anymore. These kids are not Pakistani Indian anymore. I'm sorry, I know that's crushing news for most of you. These are people who were born here in this society. You have to change your ways. You have to alter your ways. When your child comes to you asking you, can I marry this person from this center? And you say no because he or she is a different dialect. She's Hyderabadi, they're Punjabi, they're Khoja, they're this, they're that. I get shocked when I hear these stories. You should be happy at the fact that he's coming to you with a Shia girl. You should be happy that the fact that she's coming to you with a girl at all in this day and age, with all due respect. I'm sorry. This is the reality of it. We can bury a hole in the sand and we can stick our head and say everything is rahat and khayal and everything is great. Or we can open up our eyes and realize this is a disgusting environment. And if your son has come to you and chosen a pure mu'mina, a pious sister who wears hijab, does everything, who cares how she says qaf or khay or khay or gay? Who cares? See, as soon as possible, sign the nikah nama, let them go on their way. Because you and I have seen weddings and have witnessed relationships that come about. Knock on the door, there is a woman in front of you who is not Muslim, not anything. Say, Mom, Dad, meet your beau. And you can't do anything but say, okay. So if you are a father in the audience who has a son or a daughter who's willing to marry somebody from this any community, Shia, Muslim, proper sister or brother, I ask you to think about it for a moment. Understand the blessing that that itself has, inshallah. One salat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Because the reality is that this is, like I said, my last speech, and then inshallah from tomorrow the ulama are here. And I just want to make sure that all of you understand that I'm speaking to you as an individual who is, you know, part of your community. I'm your son, I'm your brother, you've seen me since I was a child. And I'm seeing things now that are really concerning me. You know, we believe that we can be religious, we can believe that we can safeguard our children, provided we don't bring them to the community. But we're so concerned about everything else but the community. I'm telling you that your salvation and the salvation of your family and your children is involvement in the community. And yes, you'll tell me that I have seen, and so have you, parents who have done everything right, who have brought their kids from day one, who then themselves are very pious and muttaqi. But individuals, like I said, children who their parents are muttaqi, their children are completely off the path. The parents did everything right, the child is still not on the right path. I've seen those, and so have you. And you're right. There, all you do is pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But ask yourself, and really everybody here, if you are a father with young kids, if you are a soon-to-be father, if you are a young married couple who want to have kids, if you are a grandfather in the audience, if you are a person who has a teenage son, a 25-year-old son, whatever the case may be, everything that's discussed right now appeals to all of you. All you want to be able to do is go to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and say, you know what, God, I did everything possible in Toronto to be able to raise a muttaqi, pious individual. I brought him to the center, I enrolled him in Sunday school, I made sure that I wasn't some hypocrite in the home, I wasn't doing dhun to my family, none of this was being done. I presented Islam the way I thought it should be presented. Now if he's off the path, if he's married to Susie and Mary and Denise, then you can't do anything about it. You can pray to Allah that maybe he might find the path again. That's all you can do. But are you doing that is the question. You know, now that I'm a father, it scares me. I look at my three-year-old and it scares me. 10 years to be 13 in this society. And God knows what the state will be 10 years from now. So when we celebrate these Jashns, I don't mean it to be a very downing or a very tough discussion. It's important that sometimes when you have such a crowd, to send the right message. In the light of the Ahlul Bayt, Imam Hassan came from a house of wilaya. And his generosity, his state of kindness, his dastakhan, his giving away of his belongings, his feeding of the poor, all came from a home environment that he was able to extract from. I'm asking you a very simple question in the name of Imam Hassan. Are you giving enough to your child that he can extract any khair, any good from you and from your household? We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to accept this qaleel ibadat, inshaAllah. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in this beautiful night of the nights of the birth of our second imam, we ask you Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to increase the ma'rifat of wilaya inside of us. Let us know the wali of our time, inshaAllah. And let us be those individuals, when the imam comes, inshaAllah, he will look at us and simply point to us and say, I want you beside my mission, inshaAllah. We ask you Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, this is the month of the Qur'an. We ask you Allah, give us the closest to Qur'an that we need by reciting it, by studying it, by learning it, inshaAllah. We ask you Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, so much bloodshed, so much tyranny in the world. The only solution that we see is the coming of your wali. We ask you Allah, hasten that reappearance and make us companions alongside him in his mission. Wassalamu alaikum.